Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press.
Media Project is a half hour of commentary and analysis on the news media issues of the week, and we welcome you to join with us in this conversation. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union. I'm here with Dr. Alan Shartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio.
Good morning, sir.
Good day, good afternoon, good evening, whenever you might be listening to the program, actually, is what we say to our listeners. And Ira Fussfeld is here, the publisher emeritus of the Daily Freeman in Kingston, New York, and affiliated publications.
Hello, Rex. Happy New Year to everybody.
To all. Judy Patrick is here, vice president of the New York Press Association and formerly editor of the Daily Gazette of Schenectady.
I am happy to be here as well.
You are happy to be here?
Beautiful, beautiful week. Lots to talk about.
It is a remarkable thing. I mentioned at the top of the show that we welcome our listeners to participate. We do media at WAMC.org. Media at WMC.org is how you connect with us. And one of our listeners, Elliot, says that he's enjoyed our discussions for many years, but recently he writes, you have become quite repetitive. It is almost always about the future of how we get news. Okay, he says, enough, please. How about going back to more topical matters? So here are Elliot's conversation starters for us. I'm interested in who you think are the best TV news people. I happen to believe several of them still work for Fox News, and it just might be that the leadership of Fox recognize that they can get more listeners by adding more progressive broadcasters. Okay, that's number one. Anybody want to take a crack at who are the best TV news people? Right, that's what I thought. Oh, dear. I don't know how you would say that. I mean, there are smart commentators. I mean, I would put in that category Chuck Todd of NBC News,
for
example.
I think he's horrible.
You do?
Yeah. But I would say I'd need a definition. Having not been in TV ever, I'm never clear as to whether or not the people we see on TV reading the news at night are just news readers, or are they, in fact, people who help develop and write the news? And right. I don't know the answer to that.
Right, and they always have those earpieces in their ears. And I always think that there's a smart producer in the control room whispering the questions into their ear.
Like Holly Hunter in Broadcast News, right?
There's no question about it. When I got taken by the late Charlie Schumann to an ABC Republican convention in 1972, and my job was to be a smart professor and sit up there and say, Thomas Marshall said to be vice president. Is not worth a warm cup of spit, or whatever the exact quote was. Somebody will correct me, I'm afraid. But yes, that is the job.
Television is very much a team deal. TV correspondents whom I've known have really worked with their producers, but it's very much a partnership. That's why producers and correspondents often go together from one network to another, for example. Some people are just news readers. I don't think that many of the anchors on Fox, for example, the dayside anchors, don't really do much reporting. They're reading what's put in front of them or saying things that are told to them by their producer in their ear. But, you know, some of the correspondents are actually out there reporting every day and running around like crazy. They work very hard.
I suspect, though, Rexy, that a writer is thinking of people like Chris Wallace, who is regarded as being, you know, he does these interviews himself, he's on, and he is, I think, regarded as being tougher, if not more progressive, than the others are, and asks honest questions. The other one that they mention quite frequently is Juan Williams. Now, Juan Williams, who had been, I believe, on NPR, I'm right about that. My producer's telling me I'm right. Juan Williams, I always thought, was a little weaker than he could be in terms of being his progressive credentials. And I had the idea that they had him on just for that reason, to make it clear that they could point at him and say, see, this is our guy who has a little bit more of a progressive.
But he's not a newsman. He's a commentator, every day. Even Chris Wallace is a commentator. He's not on delivering the news on a regular basis. The writer does cite Fox News. I'm wondering if he or she is conflating, you know, the Hannity as a newsman versus Bret Baier, who is considered to be a straight down the middle newsman on that channel.
Well, Rex and I knew this guy who used to be here in politics in Albany. He's gone now. And he used to say, that guy's not a journalist, as you just did, Ira. You know, somebody who's on the air isn't a journalist. And sometimes he's thinking of me. However, I think those people who are on television, in most people's minds, fall into a category of being somebody who not only reads the news, or if they're a commentator, they are journalists too.
You know, we're asking them to ask some hard questions, not softball questions. And I think professional journalists, when they watch that on TV and they see the softballs get thrown, I think Ivanka Trump was on CBS, the Sunday morning program last week, and it was softball after softball after softball, and that was discouraging. What we really like to see is people get pinned down, and it's difficult to do live because politicians are evasive.
And your time frame is very limited. You know, you have to hit the commercial break. You have to move on to the next topic. That's why print is able to go in greater depth and make these kinds of things. Or what they do now with, for example, NPR, and I think you do it here at WAMC also, is the full interview is available digitally and to go beyond what's just available on over the air where you have the time constraints. You do see correspondents moving from one place to another. For example, Fox News senior national security reporter, a woman named Catherine Herridge, just moved to CBS News as an investigative reporter. So to me, what that meant was this is a confirmation that she's a real journalist because she got picked up by CBS and is not just a Fox mouthpiece, you know?
I would bet you a quarter that our letter writer did not separate out commentators from news reporters. Who knows?
And here's a second question from Elliot. You have probably noticed that CNN has launched several original series on the history of music and TV broadcasting. I think they're quite good. What do you think? And do you think Fox and MSNBC will follow them? No, I do not think. CNN has a different approach. They try to do some of this feature programming, and it fills the airwaves in the hours when they don't have high ad rates and when they don't have a huge audience. So you're watching at a time when the network can afford to put in some of this history. It's low-cost content. Whenever we do historical pieces, which increasingly we do digitally, for example, that is content that's just right there in the archives. Let's reuse it, get it out there. Readers like it, especially our older readers, but it's not what you're doing if you're really covering today's news. Frankly, it's a cheaper way of filling your airwaves.
Darn. I think you're exactly right, Rex, and I hate it when I have to say that. What I worry about, if you put a Johnny Cash retrospective on, people are going to love it. They're going to just love it. They might love it a lot more than what went on in the Niskayuna Town Board.
Yeah, it's absolutely right. Please, you know, we try to please readers, listeners, viewers, but if all we did was to please them, we would be airing reruns of Gunsmoke, you know?
And oh, wait a second now. You just wait a second.
Oh, well, anyway.
There was one point on the television. I have to defend my Gunsmoke, and that was that you could get it on three different places at the same time.
No kidding.
Absolutely. It was cheap to get, and people loved it, and it was the best written show ever. Ever.
Okay. So those are the two suggestions from Elliot, who doesn't like it when we talk about the future of how we get news. Okay.
Well, since I'm the guy who invented the media project.
Right.
I have to say the future of the media is a huge part of what we do here. Because if you look at the number of newspapers, and Rex brings these to us almost every week, that have closed a day off, you know, a Saturday edition or a Thursday edition, and they're not going to do it anymore. That portends, I believe, terrible things for the American society.
3,160 journalists, according to Columbia Journalism Review, lost their jobs in 2019 due to downsizing.
But, you know, we got a letter a couple of months ago chastising us for talking too much about print because print is dying and why are you wasting your time?
Right.
And I believe that it speaks to how important that print is, that its demise is being bemoaned even by competitors in broadcast because they know how much print, how good print is when it's done well and how print helps them along. It pushes them in the right direction because they, meaning the broadcasters, often don't have the wherewithal to find the kinds of stories and investigative pieces that print is still trying to do.
This goes to the point of another piece of mail that we've gotten from listener Dane. Thank you. Says, hi there. high. I disagree, Dane writes, that the decrease in newspapers is equivalent to the death of local news. I haven't purchased a printed paper in years, but I get my news locally, regionally, internationally, etc., on a daily basis on my phone.
And who's writing that?
All right. Who does that news come from? And actually, when I walked in here, folks, just before the microphones were turned on, there were complaints from some people that they weren't able to read Times Union news without hitting a paywall. Well, you know, you didn't used to be able to get the newspaper without plunking down a quarter for it either.
Well, you could have. I'm sorry to interrupt, Rex,
yes.
But you could have listened to the television stations early in the morning reading.
You could literally,
on the AM stations, for example, on the radio, you could hear them turning the pages.
Yeah. Dane is right here. He goes on and says, the audience has changed and the medium must change as well. And that I think we all agree, the medium is certainly not print. And when we say the word newspapers here, I don't think we're talking about the printed stuff. We're talking about those newsrooms that traditionally have put out print. It's just that the printed product was where you derive the profit. And you can't, as I'm sorry to be repeating myself, and so somebody here, one of these people is going to be upset, but you don't make as much money. You can't sustain the size of your newsroom without the margin that those printed products delivered. So,
well, I just anonymously quoted you in a column. Of course, those of us who write weekly columns know that we have to do things we don't like sometimes. But, you know, you've been very clear with us that newspapers are dying, and in 10 years, they're may not be newspapers.
Print
newspapers.
Printed word.
Right.
Let's try to make clear. We're saying you're right. Print is not going to survive, I think, at least not 7 days a week in the communities. We've already lost 1,800 newspapers over the last decade in this country.
But only 70 dailies.
70 dailies, yeah. Right. Only 70
yeah.
dailies, you know?
And keep in mind that there are a lot of people out there that believe that news should be free. When they talk about the free press, they think it means that they have free access to information. It stems from this early idea that you could steal music. Apple, thank goodness, has really developed a model where people are starting to pay for their music. They're starting to pay for movies. They're starting to pay for TV shows online. Hopefully this will carry over and they will start to pay for the essential journalism that they need in their daily lives.
And, you know, when it comes to the future, Judy, another thing that Rex laid before the panel at one point was the idea that newspapers may themselves go the way of public radio, and you might get a subscription to a newspaper. I, for one, and I've written this recently, would be happy to send the New York Times some money. However, the problem is, because I think that they're doing God's work in this country right now, but the problem is that they are owned. It's a business model, and they're going to have to come to grips, as I'm sure Rex recognizes. If you're going to do that, then you're going to have some kind of a public accountability that you might not have right now.
Public accountability.
Meaning that their managers might have to include people on their boards or other places that they don't do right now. Right now, they're private companies.
Right.
You say, right.
But, I mean, aside from the New York Times and the Washington Post,
sure.
Who are making a lot of money, the difficulty really is all across the country in communities. Like, think of Utica, New York, or think of Binghamton, major communities where the newspapers are just a shell of their former selves,
absolutely.
Where they can't cover the areas around them. There are news deserts, as the term goes, just very near the studio where we're sitting here, places that don't get any coverage at all, that have no journalists watching over them.
Well, I was thinking last week, listening to this program, I thought it was a very interesting and healthy discussion about news deserts and about ghost newspapers, and I was trying to zero it into my own market. And if you think of the number of school districts, for example, in a given county, and the number of cities/towns in a given county, and all of the various board meetings that are taking place, and the number of high school basketball teams there are, almost all of those were routinely covered either by staff or by freelance correspondents by your local newspaper. By and large, those stories are not being covered right now. Now you can say, well, maybe the weeklies will pick up the slack. Well, as we pointed out earlier, weeklies are dying at a faster pace than dailies are dying. So the person who said, I get my news on the phone, there's going to be one day, if they'll turn on the phone, there ain't going to be no dial tone.
So, Judy, you're working on this some with the Relevance Project. Can you talk about what that is?
Sure. So the Relevance Project is a national effort from newspaper associations around the country and also in Canada to make newspapers more relevant again. So to really rethink what we do and to restore the trust that we've built up in our communities, paper by paper, community by community. We have to think about some of the things we've discarded. We talked about this before, and whether or not we should pick those items up again. And
for
again,
example?
We talk about obituary coverage, or we talk about a lot of times things have been discarded just because they're too time-consuming to make. So what we need to do is talk to our audience, talk to our readers, and say, what do you want from us? And really give it to them in a way that they can consume. I would love it if we could just bypass social media and have readers of local newspapers go right to the local newspaper website and eliminate this diversionary tactic. But again, I think it's all about content. It's about figuring out what we can do to bring important information to these people so that they will once again find the newspapers relevant.
Is your news a former paper? And Rex, is your paper, do you run weddings and engagements?
We do, but they're paid. They're paid announcements now.
My observation is that my old paper gets virtually nothing from that, and in exchange, we've lost all of this content that people buy the paper to read, and it's not there anymore.
That's really true. You know, there's a lot of stuff that people used to find essential that we, for cost, stopped doing. You know, the brilliant idea was, well, let's charge for wedding announcements and get some money for this. And, you know, there aren't very many anymore.
No, and the question is, if you were to successfully get some revenue from weddings and engagements, is it enough to offset the number of people who are going to stop buying the newspaper and thus get less circulation revenue?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's a very good point. You know, I've been writing lately for the Berkshire Edge out of the Southern Berkshires, and they take every day if there is an obituary, and those obituaries are prominently featured.
Yeah.
And they become major stories as opposed to, you know, an obituary page, which people go to, there's no question about it, in the Eagle, the somewhat competitive paper. But how you play it becomes pretty important, right, Judy? I mean, isn't that part of the deal?
Part of it is, but it's also the idea that journalists have kind of had their nose up in the air and saying, oh, we don't consider that newsworthy to cover. Mm-hmm. We have to really be...
And that's a mistake. Yes?
That is a mistake. We have to start saying yes to things and stop saying no so often.
Boy, I think you've got something there. You know, I remember as a young reporter, my first newspaper job as an intern was at the Rapid City Journal in Rapid City, South Dakota. Mm-hmm. And all of the community news that I had to write at that time, or I was the editor of a little paper in northwestern Indiana, the Rensselaer Republican in Rensselaer. Same family as the Van Rensselaers here, by the way. And all that community news that was the essential part of our job. And then I remember when I became a young reporter in the 80s at a major newspaper doing, like, it was more like I was writing sociology rather than writing the news about the communities. And I think we maybe got away from, because, you know, journalists got, is it snooty, as Alan, the word Alan likes to use, or is it just that we started seeing, well, let's write about the important trends and so on. Do we need to go back to the roots of writing about who's doing what in the community, the real nuts and bolts of community news? I wonder if that's part of it. You know, you used a word also a minute ago, Judy, trust. You said we need to rebuild the trust. I was listening to Joshua Johnson, the excellent radio journalist. He was the host of 1A, the nationally syndicated program from NPR that was produced by WAMU in Washington. And he's now just joined MSNBC. And Joshua Johnson was saying, trust is a matter of heart, and that is what has been lost and what the president is attacking when he attacks journalists. He's trying to denigrate the trust that has existed between audience and journalists. And I wonder how you go about rebuilding that trust. Maybe it comes from that little story-by-story, community-by-community thing.
All I know is that this radio station that people listen to at WAMC have reporters all over the place. And they can quite frequently go back to some of the stories that seem to be pedestrian to people. And people in other communities may say, who cares about that kind of thing when you're listening? So that is in the eye of the person who is making these decisions, is this question of how many people will care about this? And that, Judy, gets to your essential problem of reestablishing some of these stories.
Well, that's a classic editor question. Why do we care about writing this? Many an editor has said that to many a reporter, and you really need a frank assessment of, and the reporter has to come up, well, we care about this because.
I never thought that small town journalists were snooty, because I think they understood that the level of the journalism that they were going to be practicing was micro. And so you knew from the first day you worked there that you would be spending spending much of your initial time typing bowling scores or Little League scores or, you know, wedding engagement announcements. Gosh, when I started at my newspaper, they still were running divorce announcements.
Yeah.
But that's part and parcel of small-town journalism. So I don't believe the disappearance of that kind of coverage is because journalists have become snooty. I just think, again, it's a manpower issue.
Well, first of all, I never love it when people put words in my mouth. Rex is exactly right. I do consider sometimes the looking down the hill attitude on the part of the, or spitting down the hill on the part of journalists, is snotty. However, I don't consider it to be snotty that you say we should...
Snotty or snooty?
Snooty.
Snooty. Oh,
right. Okay. Yeah. Family or station.
It's just a matter of how much...
Always.
Yeah. Well, okay. But remember, Ira, if you're the editor of the Kingston Freeman or the publisher of the Kingston Freeman, which you are, that is a community. It's pretty solid. Whereas if Rex is running a major newspaper like the Times Union, maybe I could get a little fight going here, or GE, the Schenectady paper, which had so many different towns in it, you get a different kind of problem.
Well, I think you know that going in. I mean, I don't think Rex would argue with me that in our heydays, our respective heydays, there were stories and features in the smaller newspapers that the larger newspapers such as Rex's wouldn't touch because your market was a lot larger and you had a bit of a broader perspective. Mm. So, I mean, that's sort of the natural development of these things. But the problem is bigger, and the news deserts that we were talking about are being created because there are not enough people to put these stories and features out. And, you know, Alan, he hasn't yet mentioned it today. I'll short circuit him. You know, you've got this woman that you talk about in Great Barrington who has her
own. Ira. You know, we thought we could go a whole program. Well,
and it's not my fault.
That's not your fault. But the fact is, and I've never seen the publication, so mea culpa if
it's
I'm
almost
wrong.
Nothing.
That's what I would presume. It can't pick up the slack. Does that publication have obituaries and wedding announcements or Little League scores? And if that one doesn't, and any of the other local newspapers don't, and you know that the radio stations are not going to announce the Little League scores, news going?
Yeah. Mm. Well, let me just, since you've raised it, Ira, go back to this other thing. Sometimes some news never gets published by anybody.
By anybody.
By anybody. So even in the old days. So what Eileen Mooney has done here is to virtually sit herself down, and anything that goes on the Board of Selectmen or some of these other places, she writes down. Now, I don't know that even the great newspapers, they would take something that happened at a council meeting or... But they don't write down everything that is happening.
Well,
she does.
In the old days, you would have somebody there who would down everything and then make a determination about what's important enough to report.
And there is also, just to defend journalism as opposed to stenography, you know, there is some value to giving people context as to what goes on. Instead of just saying the Board of Selectmen did this, to say why this matters and to point out perhaps conflicts of interest, to point out where there are issues that are not being dealt with by the Board of Selectmen. That's what journalism is. It's not stenography.
Well, wait a second. I'd like to be able to, if you don't mind terribly, I'd like to be able to answer that. I do think it would be wrong of me to suggest that she doesn't do that. She does.
Ah, okay.
So that's part of the deal also. But you get a lot more material than you were getting before.
That's an online publication.
Yeah, you can get it online.
I'd be happy to take a look at it.
You send $35.
Yeah. Oh, you have to pay for it. You pay for the news.
Yeah,
I see. Kind of like the Times Union. You have to pay for it online. That's good. I'm really glad to hear that.
That seems somewhat defensive on your part.
Anyway, if you have thoughts, media@wamc.org is how you get to us. We are always happy to hear from you. You know, there were some amazing things that happened last year, 2019. When we talk about the importance of this hyperlocal news, let's not overlook some of the really significant, great stuff that is done nationally that is important. You look at some of the great projects, for example, you know, the Washington Post, the opioid files, just a terrific use of data to show how opioid has overtaken the country. Or you look at the conversation that the New York Times started with their project called 1619, which was digital and print, and you know, you got special podcasts all about the 400th anniversary of the arrival of slavery on this coast. And I think that those kinds of things are conversation starters. They are big topics that are quite different from what we're talking about here, community by community news, but they're also an essential part of the journalism ecosystem. So just looking back on some of the great stuff of 2019.
Yeah, the Afghanistan papers, the Washington Post, that was unbelievable. And so I saw this and I'm thinking, well, why can't, you know, the House investigators access this information? Maybe everybody should just file FOILs instead of issue subpoenas.
You know, I'd love to get a little bit of an update from you guys about the Washington Post. We know that Bezos bought the Washington Post, one of the richest men in the world, and there were those people who thought that he was going to be calling in the plays. Well, he did hire the editor, obviously, and, you know, that counts for a lot, it seems to me. And I read the Post almost every day, and I look at it and I compare it to the New York Times, which I think is stronger, but the Post comes out with some really good stories, which are superb. But I'm wondering what your assessment of the Post is. Has he kept his hands off it, Bezos, and is it doing everything it could?
We're not inside the newsroom, but I would have to take the word of the extraordinary editor of the Post and say, yes, Bezos doesn't have a hand in the newsroom. If he does, he's doing a damn good job, because I think the Post has been extraordinary. And in many respects, they are equal to the Times.
You think so?
Yeah. I mean, I still, because I read the Times, because I live in New York, I have seen the Times more in recent years. Mm. But boy, the Post is a better newspaper than it was a decade ago.
No question.
You look at the White House cover. I think that they are neck and neck. The Times has extraordinary Maggie Haberman and Peter Baker. The Post has a team that is extraordinarily strong as well. So I wouldn't want to try to choose, and I think we're just really lucky to have two great national papers.
Well, we are, but let me ask you a question. You're a congressman, and maybe we can discuss it next time, or a state or United States senator. And there you come out of the hearing room, and on one side you see the person from the Times, and the other side you see the person from the Washington Post. They're both beckoning to you. Where do you go?
Well, the local paper is the Washington Post, but the New York Times, as great as the Washington Post has been, in my opinion, New York Times still far outpaces it. If you look at that newspaper, the print edition, every day, page after page after page, and not just the Washington stories, the other stories as well.
So share your thoughts, folks. Media at WAMC.org. Tell us what you think about the media in your community and what you think our responsibilities ought to be going forward. Ira Fussfeld, Judy Patrick, Alan Shartok, and I'm Rex Smith. What was that guy at the end of the table? Shartok, right? Yeah, that's the guy. Thanks to our producer, David Gustina. We'll see you next week on The Media Project.
For readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give free cheers for freedom of the press.